The title of today's contact is Simple Living.
Somewhere along the line, we realized that having a lot of stuff wasn't what was going to make us happy. We wanted to be able to have time for recreation, time to enjoy each other. I just can't see having a lot of unnecessary stuff around the house when most of the world's population doesn't have anywhere close to that, and a lot of people don't have the basic necessities of life. And so we're constantly asking, how much is enough? What do we really need? How much do I keep for myself, and how much do I share?
The advantages of earning more money, the things you could buy or whatever, just didn't interest us as much as living in a more rational, calm way.
That's Cheryl Summer and Michael Lampe, a couple from O'Fallon, Illinois, speaking about their decision to live more simply. Hi, I'm Kim Furlow.
I'm Jonathan Clark, and you're listening to Contact, the weekly radio program with stories about people helping other people to meet the challenges that face us every day.
Bombarded by media images, many people are drowning in consumer debt. They're working longer hours just to pay for the goods advertisers tell them they need. Instead of working to live, they're living to work.
But a growing number of committed people are looking for deeper meaning in their lives. They're breaking away from consumerism and embracing a less complicated way of life.
Today on Contact, we'll hear about Alternatives for Simple Living, a faith-based nonprofit organization assisting people to challenge consumerism and live more simply. We'll talk to the national coordinator of Alternatives for Simple Living and hear from some people who've improved the quality of their lives by embracing a simpler lifestyle. We'll also speak to a man who helps people get started through responsible money management.
The whole point of living simpler lives is to get more joy out of life for ourselves and to help needy people.
Jerry Iverson is the National Coordinator of Alternatives for Simple Living, based in Sioux City, Iowa.
We feel that when we simplify our lives, we'll get rid of that tremendous burden we are now carrying around on our shoulders of all that stuff that we have to, first of all, go into debt to buy. Then we have to work so hard to maintain and secure it so, heaven forbid, anybody would steal it. By eliminating so much of that stuff, and the desire for all that stuff, we can lighten up our lives, get that burden off of our shoulders, and instead spend our time developing and cultivating relationships. A relationship with ourselves, feeling good about ourselves, and a relationship with our loved ones around us, with people we haven't even met yet, and especially our relationship with God. But instead, we're told every day with thousands and thousands of advertising messages that somehow our life will be more meaningful if we just buy or consume this one thing. And it doesn't work. People on the happiness scale, even though our income has doubled since 1950, are no happier than they were in 1950. So it's proven that all this consumption just doesn't work. So we're trying to have more joyful lives by focusing on relationships and not on stuff. We deal with overconsumption as an addiction. It's just that there's no war against this addiction like there is against non-prescription drugs. And yet, we feel that overconsumption is really damaging our planet. And the evidence is very clear that if we continue living the way we are now, we will be in serious environmental trouble within one generation.
Alternatives began in 1973 as a protest against the commercialization of Christmas. Its focus is on encouraging conscientious ways of living.
There's an obvious hunger for our message. I mean, I've had fathers call me right after Christmas and they say, "Help! I don't know what we just celebrated a couple of days ago, but it sure wasn't Christmas. How can you help us?" People who are being pushed toward us because what they're celebrating or what they're experiencing is so negative. We have other people who are greeting our message with a tremendous yawn because at this point, the economy is so hot, most everyone is doing so well in North America, that why would you want to make any changes? I mean, this is like falling into a nice warm pool of water or going for a great Sunday ride. I mean, why would you want to change? But there are other people who are beginning to read and understand that we are facing some really serious problems if we continue promoting overconsumption like we are, not only in North America, but now spreading it around the world, promoting what we call the traditional American dream. And so instead, we're promoting a new American dream, one that's sustainable, that is one where we're giving back to the earth as much as we're asking from the earth.
Alternatives encourages people to think about the cost of a product to the environment and not just its retail price at the store.
We are not a group that's against capitalism. I want to make that very clear. It's just that we promote what's called natural capitalism, or what we call environmental economics, over against traditional capitalism, or what's called growth economics. The first step is to tell the difference between cost and price. When we go out and buy something, we're looking at the price. That's what the price is out of our wallet. But what we don't look at often enough is the cost of what that item has actually cost the earth. In most cases, we're using things that are made out of virgin material, you know, a tree that's been cut down to make this thing, or ore that's been mined that's been put into this product. But if we convert, then we start using things over again. And it's not just a matter of recycling. Recycling is important, but it's a matter of closing the loop, that is, using things that are made out of recycled material. And that's not just paper, of course, but plastic and glass and metals and that kind of thing. So it's a matter of rethinking about how we're doing things. It's not a matter of living poorly. In fact, we think it'll be a lot healthier way of living to practice environmental economics.
Alternatives for Simple Living provides books, videos, and other educational resources to people who want to make changes in their own lives and the current economic system.
As more people read about sustainability, they're coming to us and they say, give us some tools. And so that's what we do, is we offer tools to people through our resource guide for them to, first of all, make changes in themselves, because that's where everybody needs to start. Not pointing fingers at other people, but looking at themselves. That's the first step. The second step, then, is to share this newfound joy and these new techniques of living more simply with other people. Maybe it's in a workshop, or maybe it's just in a day-to-day conversation. And part of that, of course, too, is sharing some of our financial support with the needy around the world. So that's the second step, is reaching out. And the third step is when we really get serious about changing systems. This is where we start writing letters. This is where we start talking boycotts, you know, where we're looking at changing businesses and changing governments. So those are the three steps that we promote. And people tie into those at various places and for various motives. But we think that all three of them are important.
Alternatives has a worldwide following, ranging from those who only purchase educational materials to those who volunteer to speak to others.
We have a lot of people involved with Alternatives. We have a small staff. We have a national board of directors. Then we have a lot of customers. These are people who get our resource guide and buy and use our resources and the resources that we get from other publishers as well. But in addition to that, we have over 500 volunteers around the country. And the volunteers stand ready to go out and speak about voluntary simplicity. Voluntary simplicity, that means choosing freely to live more simple lives and also to speak about us. So we have this big pool of volunteers. Then we also have members, people who have joined our organization. They get a special newsletter and that kind of thing. So there are people at a whole variety of levels of involvement with our organization all around North America and, to a less degree, in other parts of the world too. We get email and we get orders from New Zealand and Iceland and Germany and Kenya. So it really is a thrill to know that people all over the world are interested in the values that we promote.
One family involved with Alternatives for Simple Living are the Lampeys. In fact, Michael Lampe and Cheryl Summer started their lives together using ideas from Alternatives Guide to Simple Weddings.
Maybe a little clue as to our approach is, like, even when we were married, when we prepared for our wedding, we designed our own cards. In other words, we didn't buy these kinds of things, we just designed them and ran it off on a Xerox machine. That was it. I mean, I did not get a tuxedo, I just wore my better clothes. Cheryl's mom made her dress. We got very, very inexpensive wedding rings. We had a number of family members brought things and so on. And it was just a great thing. And when you consider young people are spending probably a minimum, I keep hearing of, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 for weddings. We didn't feel like we had to throw money at that to indicate that we loved each other. It just doesn't have to all come down to money.
Cheryl and Michael shared the same job at their church for 10 years, each working 4 hours a day. After the arrival of their fifth child, they decided that Cheryl would work full-time at the office and Michael would stay at home.
When we started out doing it, we didn't have any kids, and so we were gradually able to ease into kids. But it was turning into two jobs, which is totally against what we had wanted to do in the first place, was to be able to give our kids a full-time parent at home and somebody to listen to them, and not so much the stuff that two jobs could afford, but time to do things with them, play games, stuff like that.
The values the Lampeys are trying to teach their children are best expressed at Christmas time, with celebrations emphasizing family and the joy of giving to others.
We do not go out and buy a lot of Christmas presents for our kids. This past year, we didn't buy any. We made the decision that we were going to give them gifts of experience. So we said we'd go to the City Museum as a family one day instead of some toy that would cost that much money or more. We stress a lot of rituals. We make a big deal of putting a Christmas tree up on Christmas Eve. We observe Advent all the way up until Christmas Eve, and then go out in the backyard and watch for the first two stars, which is when the Jewish Sabbath begins, when you see the first two stars in the sky. Then when we see those first two stars, we come back in and turn on our Christmas music and start decorating the tree. And we have a special meal that we have every year on Christmas Eve, ritual that the kids look forward to. They seem to find a lot of security and happiness in knowing that they're going to have that same meal every year.
There are neighbors and friends and so on who do bring some gifts. And what we have also done is to have the kids open one gift each day of Christmas. So it isn't just a kind of a toy frenzy all at once, open all the gifts, kind of like a feeding frenzy. But to space it out so that you get a sense of how long the season of Christmas is, and to just be able to take one present at a time and kind of deal with that instead of so much at once. It makes things a little calmer for everybody.
We gave the kids a certain amount of money with a list of 5 charities that help other people, and then they had to sit down and decide how they were going to divide that money up. And it was really interesting to see the logic and the discussion that was going on with them. And they get thank you notes back from all these places and affirmation, so it's a good thing.
You're listening to Contact, the weekly radio program with stories about people helping other people to meet the challenges that face us every day.
Today on Contact, you're hearing about Alternatives for Simple Living, a nonprofit organization providing resources and information to people trying to live a less materialistic lifestyle.
As Contact continues, we'll hear how Cheryl Sommer and Michael Lampe are teaching their children to avoid the pressures of advertising. We'll also hear from another couple dedicated to having more with less, and from a man who teaches people how to use their resources to assist others.
When our first son was born, we made a decision that we were going to put the TV away, not so much for the TV shows, but for the ads that were on TV, because we knew at a young age their self-image was being formed, and we didn't want their self-image being formed on the commercials.
Today, the Lampies limit the amount of time their children spend in front of the TV. They're also teaching them to think critically about the images they see. They have more quality time as a family, and the children are less programmed to ask for things when they go shopping.
When we do see commercials or billboards, we always like to point out, now look what they're trying to make you think, that if you have this, then you're going to be a cool person, or just laughing at the commercials. You're saying that. That's crazy. And the kids will pick that up too and start doing it on their own, being able to laugh at some of the things the commercials are saying. But for now, we've learned a lot by not having the TV, so you can be a little more creative.
We also discovered that parents with their first child know this, but the child takes up all of your time. And we just didn't feel like we had the time to sit and watch a lot of television. And as time passed, we just came to be comfortable without it. We do get it out once in a while for major things. National elections, or maybe
Super Bowl,
you know, a Super Bowl, or something like that, something that's of great interest, and we might have, you know, the kids understand who the Teletubbies are and Barney and all that kind of thing. It's not like we will never bring it out, and it's not like we're angry with it or anything like that. It's just that I didn't want to have little toddlers singing jingles from commercials around the house or to be formed that way. I was brought up with a lot of television, and I guess most parents like to give their kids what they didn't have, you know, and what I didn't have was a lot of time with my parents. I was watching television a lot, so this is just a natural reaction, I think. As the kids get older, we do hope to get it out more and do some critical evaluation of what we're seeing. But I can tell you this, when we go to a grocery store, and I often take all five to the grocery store, which is kind of, a lot of people wouldn't attempt that, but when we go down the aisles, there isn't a lot of, you know, I want this and I want that, or give me this kind of cereal or give me that kind of cereal. They haven't been exposed to a lot of that. It's not a bad experience to take the kids to the grocery store.
Raising a family is the reason many people join the Simplicity Movement. For Ward and Lisa Hine, once deeply involved in their careers, reducing their work hours and embracing a simpler lifestyle helps them enjoy time with their three-year-old son, Ryan.
Well, I worked in a restaurant full-time. I was a chef. I was pretty much married to my job. Really, what made a lot of change for us was when Ryan was born. We decided to work out a schedule that we would share our time with Ryan as well as work part-time.
I always thought maybe 3 or 4 days a week would be perfect. I worked at a large teaching hospital as a recreation therapist. I worked 40 hours a week, had lots of hobbies, wasn't married, didn't have any children yet, and just liked being busy and traveling and that kind of thing. I knew I wanted to be more mindful about the way I was living my life and the values and making time for things that were important to me. Continue with my values of being less materialistic. I like to have a balance between my little son, my activities, my hobbies, and my work.
I was searching for greater balance in my life. Lisa calls me a stay-at-home dad sometimes, just because I spend my daytimes with Ryan and then work evenings. I enjoy it. I'm really passionate about raising our son and being a part of that. We've established a family mission to have fun, to nurture, and to live within our means.
And it's our mission statement. Family mission statement.
And that helps a lot because we can choose something, that an activity or whatever, and see if it fits our mission.
But cutting back on work hours also means less income and the adjustments that go along with that.
One of the difficult things that we think about is the future, you know, with college education and saving for our retirement and whatever. And there is some fear that we feel about how are we going to manage down the road. And then we also realize that it is in the future, and it's important to be mindful of those expenses coming up and setting aside. We're just fearful that it won't be enough.
But even when I cut back to part-time, I continued with my tax-sheltered annuities and retirement and tried to keep it the best that we can within our means. So we haven't forgotten about the future altogether. We just try to live smart and have a little cushion, maybe a couple months' salary in the bank. Once in a while, I feel a little resentful that I'm not getting a big home or a minivan to pick out like some of my friends. But then I just come away with the gratitude of what I do have, and living simply and being debt-free, I think, is something we can both be proud of.
I think that's the key, is not acquiring things and just keeping your focus on living, enjoying what you have, and not so much what you want. Not always thinking bigger. I think in our society we have this idea that bigger is better. I mean, you look at the
more
cars.
More stuff right. To have, the more prestige you might have.
Well, you even look at the cars that are being driven on the roads these days. You have big minivans and four-wheel drives.
I just try to live within my means for now. I'm lucky I have a small economy car that gets probably 38 miles to the gallon, and with gas going up, I'm glad about that. I used to complain a little bit because it was a two-door, and putting the toddler in the back with a two-door sometimes gets old, but right now with the gas going up, I'm glad I have my simple car. Don't have a car payment. I just get personal freedom from that. I think there's a lot of power and knowledge, so I'm always reading about ways to cut back. I don't go to the malls anymore. If I need something, I try to get it within one store or borrow it. When Ryan was born, we didn't spend anything. We had gifts given to us for baby showers, and then he has 9 boy cousins under age 7, and so people would send him clothes, and we would just get a lot, and then we share a lot back and forth with both of our families. So we find that kind of exciting, trying to beat the system and not always think you have to buy all this baby equipment.
I think one of the exciting points that I have nowadays is in the area of helping persons to make the choices so that we do not follow society's great propensity to spend beyond their means.
Brenton Dodge of Glendale, Missouri, teaches courses on budgeting and the responsible use of money. He's been an advocate and practitioner of simple living for decades.
We live in an age where we are bombarded with invitations to buy more, to go to more exotic places. The whole feeling that happiness can be achieved if we just spend some more of our money is a part of our culture. I'm fascinated with this whole idea of helping free up people from the idea that they've got to spend in order to find happiness.
Brenton believes that making and following a budget is the cornerstone of responsible money management. The first step to simple living is awareness of where one's assets are going.
One of the things that they need to be aware of is how much money they've got and how much money they're spending. Budgeting has been a very important part of the life of my wife and myself. It is not always easy for us to agree on how we're going to spend our money. But if we know how much money we've got coming in and where it's going out, we feel that this is a very, very important part. And it's not an easy thing to do, and there are many families that don't do any budgeting at all. It comes in and it gets spent. And many families are living with large indebtedness on credit cards. And that can only drain off the funds that would be available for other people. It's very, very important to help people discover what their assets are. Name them, how much is coming from where and where and where, how much they've got in savings, to name all of that, and then to keep record where they're spending the money so that they can begin to track how much of it is going for various causes and how much of it is just kind of escaping because we weren't really careful and we were spending lots and lots of money simply because when we were in the mall, the other day I saw a figure that said that if you're in the mall, the average expenditures when you're in the mall is $100 each time you go to the mall. And delayed gratification is really so important. It means living below our means. Our means permit us to spend a lot more and do a lot more, but if we just cut back a little bit and save some of it and give some of it away, we'll get our life more into a balance.
Brenton encourages people to be good stewards of their money to help others in need.
It's important for people to get money. It's important for people to save it. But it's even more important to give it, because in the giving is really where the fun comes.
A retired American Baptist minister, Brenton believes in the importance of tithing, or giving a percentage of one's income away. He encourages people to experience the joy of giving.
In my own life, from the time that I got married, my wife and I agreed that we would be tithers. And our income back in those days was about $3,000. And we were paying $40 a month in rent for a two-room apartment. You'd call it an efficiency, I guess. We slept in the living room and ate in the kitchen. But nevertheless, we didn't have a car, we didn't have a telephone, but we were tithers. That's where we started. And then through the years, as our income went up, my wife eventually went to work when the children were older, and we had more money, but we continued to tithe. And then we got to the place where, in my present situation, we realized that a tenth isn't enough. And so we have had great joy in providing funds for the people who are the weak and the poor and the have-nots of society, in being able to contribute, at the present time, we're at 26% of our income. It is a joy to be able to provide it to shelters for battered women and the mission causes that feed people around the world. It's just very, very satisfying. I would rather put my resources into people rather than into property, into things. I find that I'm fascinated with helping people to put their lives together in a way that they can enjoy one another and enjoy each day. And I've been thinking about what there is about myself that I can live quite contentedly without having to go to the mall and buy things or go someplace to be entertained. The very sense of getting up in the morning and living in a world that God has given to us without having to accumulate to add more. As soon as I accumulate things, then I become the caretaker for it, which complicates life. To let go and to relinquish and to give up that which I've even thought was important in the past is so freeing.
We have many resources that are both inspiring to get people geared up to make changes in their life, to simplify their life and see the need for it, and also resources that are very much nuts and bolts.
Alternatives National Coordinator Jerry Iverson.
If we learn how to simplify our lives, we may end up buying fewer things. We may end up spending our money and our time doing things that are actually healthier for ourselves and for our planet and for other people. I would like to urge people to be in touch with us.
Today's edition was produced by Catherine Caven. Keep in touch every week with Contact, a Jesuit radio production.